Hello, everybody. Welcome to Comedy Film Nerds, episode 319. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini, and I couldn't be more excited. Kickstarter funded.
Mad crazy shout-outs yes. to the 499 people that...
You guys are awesome. And I know just from the comments section, it was mostly Comedy Film Nerds fans.
yeah, that's so cool, man. We'll read the comments later
yes,
in the show.
Indeed.
But that was such a cool thing.
With a disclaimer. This is probably the most foul-mouthed of the bunch.
Good. God bless you guys. Way to go. Nice work.
Yeah.
Way to bring it home.
Yeah.
And still there's people who are like, what's going on in the comments?
Yeah.
Love that. That makes it even better, I think.
Yeah,
that there's people just like, I've never seen a project that people funded where it sounds like they hate it.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
understand.
Or they keep using the same bad words over and over
again.
How
do they all know the same bad word? So yeah, that was really cool. I want to thank some people that came out. I did the set list show at Meltdown on Saturday. I haven't done set list in a while. I absolutely love that show. If you're not familiar with it, it is the coolest concept for stand-up comedy that I think. Troy Conrad came up with this idea. So the comics show up. It's about five, six stand-up. It was like Rick Overton, Todd Glass was on it, Caitlin Gill, Riley Silverman, Hampton Yount, I think one other. So you show up. You have no idea what you're going to do. And they have a screen on the stage, and they flash like topics, and you have to pretend like it's on your set list and you already have a joke ready to go about it. So they'll flash up, like, I think Rick Overton got something like, I don't know, prostitute hero. Like, you just see these like weird...
Is it crazy premises?
Yeah, it's just... And you have to make something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most of the audience has been there before because they've been doing this for a while. It was a TV series, I think, in the UK and Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And so... It's just pure riffing. I love it. I was driving there in my head. I was like, okay, what am I going to do tonight? And I went, oh, wait, there's nothing. There's nothing to prepare. You just show up and run with it. And it was so much fun. And everyone kind of puts their own take on it. It's just, it's if you know, if it's, these do shows in LA, they do them all over the place. They do them at UCB. They do them at the Improv. They do them at Nerdmelt. Check one out. It is one of the most inventive, fun stand-up comedy nights you're gonna see.
Oh, cool.
So that was really, really
cool.
Can't
prepare for it.
Can't prepare. It's so much fun. And like, I got a couple and I was like, I love the dilemma of like, how do I make this a bit? Like, one was like, hashtag meat in my shoe. So I actually told the story of how I became a vegetarian. It was cool stuff. It was a lot of fun. So that's really cool. Anyway, I know we got some new people listening to this show, so just to let you know what Comedy Film Nerds is, it's a weekly movie review show. We're going to talk about...
Lots of cool movies this week. Keanu, Jungle Book, we're going to revisit. Mother's Day, and some...
Yeah, you said cool movies.
Yeah. some cool trailers. Batman the Killing Joke, Snowden, and premiering this week, Dear Lord. God, Captain America, Civil War.
That's it. That's all we need. Yeah. That's all I'm fired up for. Mm-hmm. I already have my tickets for the IMAX 3D at the Chinese Theater.
Oh, it's going to be amazing.
I'm ready to go. So that's what the show is. My name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini.
We talk about movies every week. It's a weekly movie review show. And we have a guest on who we're introduced in a minute.
Very shortly, but today we have a sponsor.
Oh, I like the sponsor.
Proflowers.com. And because Mother's Day is coming up, you want to make sure you're covered. You get mom 100 blooms with a free glass vase for $19.99 plus shipping and handling.
Now, how could you make that better, Chris?
Well, there is one way. You're talking about an upgrade.
Oh, let's do it.
A floral upgrade?
Floral upgrade. Or, how do I upgrade that $19.99, Chris?
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing. You can do a premium vase, which is better. Premium means better.
Okay. And, Let me write this down. Premium equals better. Got it.
And you can add gourmet chocolates for just, not asshole chocolates. This is actual gourmet chocolates. You know, the ones that they throw in like a, you know, at a drugstore. Those, not those chocolates.
No.
These are real.
These are real chocolates.
Good chocolates. Gourmet
chocolates.
It's
the same company that runs Sherry's Berries.
Yeah. So it's going to be good chocolate.
It's going to be good chocolate.
For just $9.99 more. So you go to proflowers.com and use the code CFN. You have to use the code CFN to get this amazing deal. And all you have to do is go to the blue microphone in the top right corner of proflowers.com and type in CFN, and you get all these great deals.
I got my flowers last week.
So did I. It was amazing.
Well, you look like a hero.
I know.
Every Valentine's Day.
Yeah, yeah, and every Mother's Day.
I was
Day.
There. Your wife's yeah. like, what's this? You're like, Happy Mother's yes. Day, honey. All right. Nice.
See, I didn't forget.
Didn't forget. So it is the perfect gift for like, oh, shit.
Exactly. Yeah, they'll get there in time. And what I love, too, is it's like they don't die right away either. Like you put them in the water, you get the solution, they bloom, and you have them for a long time.
I've had mine for a week now.
Yeah.
They look great. They've already full bloom. So after they say, after about a week or so, then you cut the stems again.
Right.
And put, they give you two bags of plant food. So you put it mm-hmm. in when you first get it mm-hmm. and then put it in again after a week. They look great. I got flowers in my place.
Yeah.
They look awesome. Right next to my surfboard.
And we can actually make a home out of vases at this point.
I'm making some type of raft.
Yeah. A vase raft.
A vase raft.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to make, a vase raft.
It'll be easy to decorate.
It's going to be great. And I'm gonna sort of Tom Hanks Castaway my... I'm pretending as though I'm stranded at Santa Monica and I can't get out. So I'm gonna make a vase raft.
To get to the pier.
Yeah, to get to the Santa Monica pier, because there's a Mexican restaurant at the end of the pier. That's fantastic. So that's what I'm doing at yeah. proflowers.com.
Makes perfect sense. So proflowers.com, go to the top right corner with the blue microphone, type in CFN and get these amazing deals. Mother's Day is coming up. Check it out.
Yeah, for $9.99, get the chocolates, CFN.
Yes.
Coupon code CFN. And guys, obviously, when you do use these things and use our coupon codes, it does help the show because these companies keep sponsoring with us because they yes. see that our fans track and buy stuff. So if you need right. to buy flowers for somebody, use the coupon code.
Do it. So, all right.
Let's introduce our guest.
Let's do it.
Another
first time guest. Really happy to have him because he's really in our wheelhouse. He has a podcast. He's nerdy. He's wearing a Labyrinth t-shirt.
Yes.
With David Bowie on it and his wonderful wig. Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Kramer Glickman.
Well, hello and good afternoon.
Yes.
Nice radio voice.
That's my radio voice.
So for those of the fans, tell our fans a little bit about your podcast and what else that you work on.
Sure. So I came out of Nickelodeon. I was on
you
a show.
Born there.
I was born
an actual Nickelodeon.
I was built from used pieces
sure.
from Double Dare. They just took a bunch of random pieces. They got a Hey Dude, some Hey Dude. They just glued it together. And they stuck me together. So yeah, I've been I was on a show called Big Time Rush that was on Nickelodeon for 5 years, and then it was four seasons and a movie. So we did the show for about 5 years. Over
what did you do on the show?
I played the manager of the band. So it was the Big Time Rush was a band,
right?
And then they were like the Monkees
right.
for our generation. They were the Monkees for this younger generation. It was like Entourage kind of. It was that mix. It was like
right.
a Entourage / Monkees kind of show. I played the manager who yelled a lot and was a real asshole, basically.
Congratulations.
I broke things, you know, I'd scream and yell, and
that's perfect for a kid's show.
Oh yeah, it was great. Like I was like the angry boss. Like
right.
To my grandparents, or like my mom and her generation was like, they'd watch it and be like, oh, you're like on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, you're like the boss.
Yo, you're Lou Grant.
I'm Lou Grant. Like, and then I met him, the actor that
played Asner.
Ed Asner, mm-hmm. and we had a big talk about playing that character and how fun it is to like be the angry yelling guy, and that people look at you like they're nervous of kids were nervous to talk to me, and fans were nervous to talk to him when he was doing Mary Tyler Moore Show, and it was like a very similar kind of weird
That's
experience.
Awesome.
So yeah, it was super cool. So I did that show for a long time, and then. That show ended, and I started writing and working with comedian Mike Black and John Schnepp, you know John Schnepp
mm-hmm.
from The Death of Superman
yes.
Lives, what
mm-hmm.
happened. So the three of us wrote a project and got it into the hands of the Jim Henson Company, and they've taken it from here, and we're like, I work there with them all the time on it, which is super cool. And and then I started doing a podcast. A live show that's also a podcast called The Nighttime Show, which we do once a month, Saturday night at the Hollywood Improv. It's a live late night show. And it's really weird. It's a really weird show. We have a new death metal band every month as our house band. And we've had Ex Mortis as our house band. We've had the Tulsa Skull Swingers, which I don't know if you know who that is, but that's like Ron Lynch and Craig Anton and all those guys. And then we had Iron Knot for a while. This month we have some other amazing guy. I'll tell you. I'll find his whoever it is. And then every month it's always like we have this amazing death metal band, and then we have amazing comedians perform, and then I interview them after their performances.
That sounds awesome.
And we have a desk on stage and a couch, and it's like it feels real. And we do like weird like man on the street bits. Like we did a bit last month where Adam Ray was on the show, and so I played a trivia game with Adam Ray, and every answer he got right, he'd get a point, but every answer he got wrong, a girl that was on the live stream would beat the shit out of a guy named Robbie. So there was this fat guy, our fat friend named Robbie, who's tied to a chair, and every time he'd get an answer wrong, she'd hit him with like a pool cue or something, and it was amazing.
I think I came to do the Owen Benjamin podcast after this happened because you guys were cleaning up from it.
It's an ordeal. We shoot off confetti, we blow things up on stage.
Oh, I love it.
Andy Dick, I did a joke about Andy Dick, and then he ran up on the stage and broke part of our set in front of the audience. It's a lot of surprises, a lot of crazy stuff. And so then we do a podcast called the Nighttime Show Podcast for the guests or the people that we can't really fit into the live show. We find ways of having them on the podcast, like Brandon Braga. We just had him on the show, who wrote Star Trek Next Generation. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then we had 3-6 Mafia come and do
Brandon
the show.
Brandon Braga, he's written what? Hundreds of Star Trek episodes.
Yeah, Star Trek Next Generation, Voyager, all that
Didn't
stuff.
Didn't he help create one of those? Or?
Yeah, he helped.
Deep Space Nine? No?
No, it was Enterprise.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and he co-created Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson, which is so amazing. So we had him, and then we had 3-6 Mafia, who won the Oscar for It's Hard Out There for a Pimp.
Right.
So it's a weird show. We do weird things to our guests on that show, and it's, you know, it's like it matches the live show. Like I've done the monologue on the live show, and at the end of the monologue, I've had a guy in a cake costume run up on stage and attack me. Like it gets weird. Like we try real hard to like push the old Conan O'Brien show, like how that show was with the masturbating bear. Like somewhere between that, you know, and a little bit of comedy Bang Bang and a little Eric Andre show, and it's all kind of mixed together into this fun.
What the nighttime show.
Cool.
That's the nighttime show.
Oh,
yeah,
very cool.
This month it's May 14th with Tom Segura and Bill Farmer, the voice of Goofy, who's been the voice of Goofy for like 40 years.
I also see you, funny Helen Hong.
Helen Hong, who's amazing.
God, she's funny.
Amazingly funny. And we have DJ Doug Pound, who's Doug Lussenhop, who is the editor of Tim and Eric. Awesome show. Great job.
Cool.
It's a real weird, fun time. We have a good time with it.
Excellent. All right, well, check it out.
I love it.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm a huge, massive movie nerd, and I go to the movies about 3 times a week, and I try to watch everything that's out there.
Outstanding.
Like, I have like weird tastes. So there's certain things that's really weird that I like. Like, I love bad movies.
Well, we're going to get into
that. I'm obsessed with bad movies.
When I met you at the Improv, I was there, and because Sean Merrick from Sideshow helped set this, being on the show, and
adore that guy.
And he was like, "Hey, Steven," you were like, "Oh, you're doing the show? Hey, wait, all right." And you were like, "And you were like, I can't wait to see Mother's Day."
I couldn't wait. I asked every friend of mine to come with me to the movie, and no one would. And I bribed a friend of mine to come with me because I had made him see New Year's Eve and Valentine's Day. And he's just a friend comedian guy that I'm friends with. It's a good guy. But I was like, I make him go watch horrible movies. It's like part of our deal. He hates me for it. We've been friends for like 14 years, and I ruin his day.
I wonder what movie is going to be the one that ends the friendship.
Like there's a possibility. Yeah. I've had that happen with other people where they stop going with me because I've ruined it. Oh, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
The movie, by the way, that ruined it, like it ended me being able to like convince a friend to come with me, was the Nicolas Cage movie.
That's it. Which one?
It was the one about the end of the world where all the people vanish up into the sky. It was
Oh my god.
It was him and Chad Michael Murray, who's
yes.
Yeah,
I almost want to say The Happening, but that's the other one.
It's based on a book. I'll have to look it up. But I made him go watch it, and that movie was.
But for the record, wasn't Ghost Rider?
Was it? No, it's not. It wasn't the Christian one, right?
Yes, it was the Christian one.
Oh, right.
The Rapture one.
The Quickening, or the not the Quickening.
It was called The Quickening. That's the name of the
movie. Bibling.
Was it The Rapture?
No. I know it is a movie about the Rapture. It's right. I'm Jewish.
Oh, Left Behind.
Left Behind. I was in Left Behind. Yay!
It's based on the Left Behind books.
What an absolute train wreck of a film. Where like, but you're watching it, and this is who was in the, because it's an airplane, right? They're all in an airplane, and then a bunch of them vanish. So here's who's in the plane and who gets left behind in the plane. Jordan Sparks from American Idol.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Quinn Aaron from The Blind Side, the big, giant, fat monster, giant, huge guy.
Right.
Okay. A dwarf. I don't know which one, but there's a dwarf.
Wow.
who's angry, very angry.
Oh.
And Chad Michael Murray and Nicolas Cage.
Wow.
And you're like, what are these people? Who cast this? Like. Like, just a lunatic, just some sort of like, well, dang, whatever, whoever.
I don't know that it was a lunatic. I think it was based on the bottom of a list of availabilities. If people heard about that script and went, nope, can't do it. Like many people, you know, like Ted McGinley was like, ooh, yeah, I don't know if I can't.
Yeah, absolutely. No
and
way.
Billy Zane might not have been available.
Billy Zane was like,
a very good possibility.
I'm doing The Mummy on Ice.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
It's like, well, we couldn't even. I'm sure there was a conversation at that casting table. We couldn't even get Brandon Fraser.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No one was available.
Brandon Fraser's never available.
Yeah.
And they're just like, I got a call from the IRS specifically asked us to hire Nick Cage.
Yeah.
We have to.
Well, Andy Dick was just not available.
Andy Dick was like, I can't.
Paulie Shore is like, I got better things to do.
I really am busy right now.
Yeah, no way.
All right, so let's get into it.
I
want to talk about Keanu. I saw this movie, and it's a lot of fun. It's a movie. It's one of those movies, too, that is exactly as advertised. If you like Key and Peele's show, you like them as performers, this is them on a larger screen.
Right.
It's not a groundbreaking film. It's not an amazing story. It's none of those things. It's, in a weird way, it's almost like a fan film. Like, if you like what they do, you're going to like their film.
Right.
And the film, and they make no bones about it, it's just a framework. They lose their cat. They look for their cat. It's for them to pretty much do sketches and jokes throughout the film until we get to 90 minutes, and then it's over.
they find the cat at minute 89.
Yeah, yeah.
Last joke.
Right.
So, and pretty much, but it's not like, but it doesn't pretend to be anything other than that. That's what I like about it. There's no like weird trailers, there was one fake cat trailer that I thought was pretty funny. But there's no like, this is what it is. It is exactly what it is meant to be. So. The thing that I really liked about it, too, is you could tell Keegan-Michael Key and is it Jordan Peele?
Yeah.
Is that Jordan Peele? They're really good friends, and they've been working together for a really long time. So they have that type of rapport that not every comic duo has. You can go all the way back to, like, Abbott and Costello,
right.
Or even if you look at, like, the Blues Brothers with Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. It comes through on the screen. It really does. Like, they're having a ball. They love working together. They have such an amazing rapport that, you know, they light up the screen whenever they're together because they're also very different. That's the key about being a comedy duo. You can't have two people that are exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the one guy that's a stoner. One guy is, you know, is a family man. And, you know, they make jokes about who talks whiter than the other and
right.
All this stuff. And it's really funny. And our buddy Tiffany Haddish.
Tiffany Haddish. She
does a great job in it. And she's not she's a main character. She's in the entire thing pretty much. So she does a really good job. The one complaint I will have about it, they went a little bit like on some of the they went for some of the easier jokes, like in the easier premises, like you know, there's two badass assassins. They get, you know, they pretend they're the two badass assassins, and like, well, yeah, we don't. You guys are really creative. You don't have to kind of hit that crutch for the very mm-hmm. long. There's other mm-hmm. things you could do. Like I thought they, you know, it was a little lazy in a couple places, but story driven plot wise. But as far as like jokes and sketches, they're all really funny, and it'll make you laugh, especially if you're fans. But is it going to win any Oscars? Is it going to be like this? Is it going to be right? Exactly.
But it's like, remember Brain Candy? Like,
yeah, it's exactly what it is.
It's just Brain Candy. If you're
that was a great movie.
It's a great movie.
It's a longer version. If you're a fan of what they do on TV, you're going to enjoy this film. Like I can't imagine a huge fan of the show going, that movie was awful.
Right. Anyone who doesn't like this is someone that just doesn't know them, doesn't like them.
Saw it by accident.
Right.
You know, I'm like, who are these guys? Yeah. This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So, but it's fun. It is what it is, and it doesn't pretend to be anything different. And it's a fun time at the movies. If you're fans, you're going to enjoy the film.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I love those guys. I think they're absolutely hilarious.
I've seen so many sketches of theirs that just are hilarious. The angry Obama voice.
Yeah,
thing.
That's
like
really
that,
funny.
That's fucking hilarious. Oh,
and a little bit of trivia too. Keegan-Michael Key has a cat allergy, so he had to be medicated to interact with Keanu, the cat.
That is fascinating.
And Method Man plays Cheddar, and on The Wire, he played cheese. and this is great because I was thinking, well, Keanu Reeves must have been aware of this movie.
Right.
And sure enough, yeah, he offered to voice Keanu in like a dream sequence when he heard about the film.
They should do that on the special features.
Right.
They should do a special cut where Keanu just does the voice of the cat the whole way through.
He should.
Should just write dialogue for him.
Yeah,
to
just have
the
cat go, there's a bomb on the bus.
Yeah, exactly. That would be great.
And also the kitten is adorable, and I'm thinking, well, you know, it's probably like babies. There's more than one. And sure enough, seven cats and kittens were used to play Keanu.
Wow. That is crazy.
Some good cat stats.
Yeah, so, you know, seriously. A lot of... the other thing, as a cat owner, I'm always fascinated when you can get a cat to do anything,
right?
Let alone be in a movie and actually hit cues and walk or go a certain way. So I would say extra kudos to the cat wrangler, you know, an unsung hero of this film. Nice work.
I love Tiffany Haddish. She was at my house for Thanksgiving last year,
mm-hmm.
and we've been friends for a long time. And seeing whenever you see a comic like make that leap into like a movie, mm-hmm. I think that's like the best thing in the whole world. It just made me so happy that she's in that movie and that she has so much dialogue and so much to do. And Jamar Neighbors is in the movie also, who's a comedy regular over at the Comedy Store. Mm-hmm. And same, there's a lot of comedians in that movie. And you know, I love when they let comedians be funny and just do their thing and they don't ruin it, you know, with a bunch of you know, bad writing or bad garbage. You know,
when they like make they let a comedian do their thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And without, because so many times you can always see like, oh god, they're forcing that comic to do that dumb.
Exactly.
You watch them in something, and you're like, oh man, and you get bummed out.
Right? Yeah.
You can tell they're like jammed into something, and they're like and the comic is trying to make it funny, and you're like, ugh.
Because this was definitely in their comfort zone for sure, because they had control of the whole thing, and the director from the show directed the film. But I would like to see next, now that this is done, we've got kind of like a nice long Key and Peele sketch movie done.
Right, yeah.
I would love to see them work with a filmmaker like, say, Shane Black, and like see what they could do in a different framework, because they're both really talented guys. I think they could pull off both drama and comedy and do something really different and interesting. So I hope they do something different next time.
I
think they could pull it off.
I'd love to see them do more movies. I think they're they're such talented mm-hmm. guys, and we just, you know, we should see more of them. But even who's the actor that plays the guy with the braids, white guy? He's on Last Man on Earth.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Will Forte?
Yeah, it's Will Forte, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Will Forte, like, he's so funny, letting him do his weird thing in the movie. Mm-hmm. I loved that. I thought he was so just incredibly funny. I think I'm actually going to take my mom for Mother's Day to watch Keanu. I'm pretty sure that's the plan.
So
yeah, Rob Hubel's in it.
So. Oh yeah, he does a great job. God, too. Yeah, he's only in a couple scenes, but he always does a great job.
It's a funny cast, and those guys are hilarious, man. Yeah. I'm excited to see it. All right, I finally got around to seeing Jungle Book.
Yes. Now, what did you think?
It's been a while since I've seen the original animated one from the 70s.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of went into it. It's barely, and this isn't a slam on the film. It's just so different. It's just a whole new thing because it's live action kind of, you know. But it is a lot of CG. The other one. It's so different because the other one was just a Disney 70s animated musical. It was more about the songs. Mm-hmm. This had a couple songs in it, but I liked it. Like, it was suspenseful. I liked the effects. It was pretty fun. It was pretty entertaining. I didn't see it in 3D, which I could see that could be kind of cool. Actually, you know, I know some people didn't like the celebrity voices. I didn't mind the celebrity voices. I thought
Yeah, the original Jungle Book was actually 67. Even earlier.
Right,
than the
so 67. Yeah. So it's real, like, classic Disney.
Wow.
And this, I think they did a good job of sort of rebooting or reimagining this, whatever you want to call it. And I like
it. Looked photorealistic. That's what was so amazing.
That was impressive because, you know, it says something about the technology and how they used it. But I don't know. I left going, well, this kids are going to love this.
Right.
Like, I bet you kids are going to really have a blast with this movie. As well, they should, because that's what the first one was.
Mm-hmm.
And your kids liked it?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get into any spoilers, because we talked a little bit about on the last episode about kind of some different endings or whatever. But, you know, and I like how they made... The big Christopher Walken's character,
King Louis.
Yeah. They made him big and scary. Like,
yes,
that scene was like, wow. I was definitely scared, and I liked what Idris Elba did, and
he was really menacing.
Yeah, he was really menacing, and the like nobility of Ben Kingsley's character and all that. I love Bill Murray. I thought it was really, it was a really cool. It's a really cool kids movie, and I can see, like, you know, it's a cool story, and I think it's, you know, it's cool that kids today can watch this and get something out of it.
The first thing that I was thinking when I was watching it is, my God, Jon Favreau, unbelievable career to go from Swingers to this, like, and to, Swingers to Iron Man to the, guy is a genius. He's amazing.
In the middle is like chef and maid, you know.
Yeah,
I forgot at the end of the movie when they showed directed by, and I was like, God. And I had that same thing. I went, this is the same guy that did Iron Man.
Yeah,
it's like unbelievable.
So different.
Yeah,
and he does the thing that. Is not easy for some directors to do. Some directors kind of always make their type of movie. And that's not a slam necessarily.
Right.
But they're like, a Wes Anderson movie is a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah. Right. Tim Burton movie is a Tim Burton movie.
Exactly. And that's fine. And that's that's like,
sometimes a Tim Burton movie is not Tim Burton-y enough.
Yeah.
And we go, that's big eyes, you're like, why isn't it weirder?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just not weird enough.
Tim Burton is a good example of where it's always a Tim Burton movie, but where it fails is when he does remakes, and when it succeeds is a lot of times is when he does original.
Right. Right.
And that's the thing is, I watched all the credits, you know, and I was just going, God, Jon Favreau.
Every visual effects artist on the planet worked on that film.
Yeah. And he understands, though, how he's one of those directors that goes, oh, this is the genre of movie that I'm making. So it needs to be this. You know, it needs to have those. This is a kids. This is kind of an animated kids movie. So I'm just going to make the action more with the technology that we have today, unlike 50 years ago. I'm going to make it more, you know, up to speed on that. And, you know,
he understands the genres he's working in, even when he moves.
Exactly. When he, like Chef, he goes, I'm making a little quiet, little low budget movie about food and a guy kind of restarting his life. And he goes, so that's all character driven. Mm-hmm. It's all about the characters and the right. interaction. And they're really, it's takes place on a food truck.
Right.
So I'm going to make that movie. I'm not going to try to make that movie bigger.
Right.
You know,
right.
Yeah. Iron Man is Iron Man. It's right. $100 million of yeah. giant show business.
Yeah.
Franchise.
He's so smart.
Fucking do it. Blow it out, but mm-hmm. still keep, you know, he's really good at characters and story. And
he's a lot like what Spielberg was like in the yeah. like in the beginning, where these huge, amazing epics, but with enormous, crazy things happening. But then the human element is still so fresh and so you know, well written, and the acting is like on point. You know,
well, that's like all these big some of these action directors. Why they always sort of the ones that miss the mark is because they miss that.
Yeah,
they're just about the effects. And they're yeah. like, well, we'll have these two-dimensional stereotypical cliches run around and say cliche lines and blah, blah, blah. Just get them to the end where they save the day. And
sure. And well, like, you remember the first Transformers with Michael Bay? Spielberg was involved in right. that movie, and you can feel Spielberg all over that movie. It's the parents. It's yeah. Shia LaBeouf and the parents. That whole relationship, that's Spielberg. Like, that's not Michael Bay's work.
Yeah, Michael Bay afterwards is a fucking bag of dicks.
Right. But then, but then all the crazy giant blow-up stuff. Like that's all Michael Bay
that's
stuff.
All he does.
Yeah, and then you watch the rest of the movies, and Spielberg's nowhere near them, and right. they get weird. You know, it gets weird.
That's being generous.
Here's my only problem with Jungle Book is because I went to go see it. I saw it with my family, and we all had a wonderful time watching it. But I have one. Here's my one issue. Did you guys see that Planet of the Apes the last one that they did, the Return of the Planet of the Apes,
Dawn
of the Planet of the Apes? Mm-hmm. Okay, so the way they shot Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is they took people out to the forest and they put them in the mocap suits, and then they shot them in the forest,
right?
Which is why it looked so phenomenally real. Mm-hmm. My issue is, and then Avatar, which was a phenomenal movie, right, was all shot on green screen, right? It was all
blue screen.
Yeah,
it looked great.
Yeah,
but it was a great right. But it's a blue, like green screen right. movie, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's nothing real. It's all mocap people on giant stages,
right? Without a script,
right?
Go ahead.
Yes.
Horrible dialogue,
right? But still, problem. So this movie was done that way, where it's an actor running around on a giant
green screen.
Yeah.
In downtown LA.
Yeah,
right.
Sure did.
It sure as hell felt like, for me, I was like, the jungle doesn't look real. The jungle and the animals mm-hmm. all look exactly the same. They all look like the same kind of fake mm-hmm. CG looking. So sometimes the animals would look better, and sometimes they didn't look so great.
It was
tricky for me because at least with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, like, you have a real background, so you're comping in these creatures into a real background. And sometimes you can feel the depth sometimes when you're looking at things of what distance looks like.
That's yes. a good point.
And mm-hmm. that was bothering me. That's a weird thing to be bothered by, but you know.
No, that's actually a good point, because on some of the close-ups, I was like, oh, that looks like they actually built a fake jungle on a soundstage.
Right.
Right.
Or just the log that he's sitting on.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that looks like, oh, that wide shot is all CG.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and it didn't. I guess it didn't take me out of it as much. And normally that does really take me out of things.
Yeah.
Because I think I was so just given over to the kids.
Yeah.
Talking animals.
Well,
fine.
Favreau right. does a great job, and right. Disney yeah. does a great job. But every once in a while, there's a little bit of something where you're like,
that's such a good
distance
analogy.
Doesn't look right, or something doesn't. Mm-hmm.
That's
you know,
so right, because that's what made
yeah.
these last two Planet of the Apes movies so amazing to me in terms of technology. But also, then it did make for the acting, because you've got. You're the actor. I'm acting against someone, even though
right.
they're in a mocap outfit.
Right.
I'm still acting against you. So there was that emotion and everything. And it felt where, and this is a tough order. We talked about it a little after you saw it, Chris, on the episode where, you know, this is a young kid.
Right.
With no acting experience. Right. And I think he did the best job he could be.
He was great. I loved that kid. I thought he was great.
Because that's a tough gig for a seasoned actor.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah.
Run around on a green or blue sounds, because I guess apparently this one they did
blue. Yeah, so they did blue.
They did blue.
Because of the greenery.
But it's not like, look, they're not going to throw Gary Shandling in a... You know, they wouldn't, God rest his soul, but yeah. They weren't going to throw Gary Shandling in a mocap suit and throw him on the ground in a jungle. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not going to happen. And I totally get that. But there are moments where, right.
Andy Serkis, he'll be there.
Yeah. And you know what? Jim Henson's Creature Shop came in and did some puppeting stuff throughout the movie to help the actors like have something to play off of. But yeah, there's little things in there where, I thought it was a great movie, and I thought the music was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I loved hearing Christopher Walken do the song. The song.
I Want to Be Like You.
I Want to Be Like You. Mm-hmm. Oh, so amazing. And Bill Murray was amazing.
Yeah, he did a really good job.
Man, I adore him. He's great.
So overall, I think it was fun. And I like, if you have kids and haven't seen it, I'd take your kids
to
see it.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to really enjoy it.
Hey, now it's time for another Spare Min. Download the Spare Min app, you guys, and you can talk to friends without giving out your phone number. It's a really cool app. It's free. And you can say, hey, go to Spare Min, follow me. Like, I'm at Graham. You're at Chris J. Mancini. And then you can have conversations with people.
Yeah. I'm at CFN Chris, I think.
Yeah. So it's a really cool app. It's free. It's in, Apple and Android and all that. They're in their app stores. So download it. And here is David Huntsberger.
I think you called him in the space cave.
I call him in a space cave, talking about why he likes Snowpiercer. So here is a Spare Min from David Huntsberger.
Hello.
Hello, Graham Elwood.
Oh, we've got David Huntsberger here for a Spare Min. David, what movie do you want to talk about?
Well, Graham, I'm glad you've asked. I recently watched a movie that I was somewhat prompted to do by one of those a link online that I saw that said, the 10 best movies on Netflix that you haven't seen or something like that. So I clicked it, and then I had seen, three or four of them, and I'm always skeptical clicking on those sorts of links because I feel like, they're going to be way off. But of the movies that I had seen, I did like them, so I thought, oh, this is kind of in my wheelhouse. These are movies I did enjoy, so I will examine this list further, and one of them was a Snowpiercer, which I think in the article it kind of said, confusion as to why it didn't do better in the theaters, why there wasn't a bigger release for it. It just seems like a theater movie, and it seems like one that would have caught on and done better, and yet for some reason it didn't. And so I watched it and had that same feeling of like, yeah, this should have been more of a success. It stars Chris Evans, who I'm not all that familiar with. The original Fantastic Four, I saw that, thought he was fine, but he didn't really jump out to me as sort of like he could play like a gritty kind of guy. And the story involves this train. So it's a post-apocalyptic thing that I think that probably pushes people away to some degree. Like, oh boy, another one of these. But the world is frozen over, and there's kind of like a Kurt Vonnegut element of like Ice Nine that is frozen over the entire planet. It's uninhabitable, but the remaining people live on this train. And we meet Chris Evans at the back of the train, which is where like the poorest members of society live. And so there is a bit of an allegory, I guess, or a metaphor there that the people in the train at the front are doing fine, and the people at the back, they're being fed this horrible food, and they're all tattered, and they've lost limbs, and they're freezing, and they're trying to mount a resistance to get up to the front of the train and establish communication and kind of right the wrongs. And in a lot of ways, like how contemporary American society, there is this discord with people feeling like, hey, you people with all the money, this is unfair. We can't live like this anymore. But it's not heavy-handed. The movie doesn't really draw on that too much. It just follows this group of people as they attempt, led by Chris Evans, to traverse from the back of the train to the front, which doesn't sound all that exciting, but the set pieces car to car are really interesting. The mm-hmm. not gimmicks, but the methods they use, I guess, or the, what's the right word there? Like the,
yeah, the, well, I mean, I think that's the interesting thing that you hear about this movie. Because when you just say what the movie's about, I think it's prone to people going, what? Like Captain America's on some weird ice train. But then everyone that I've talked to has the same reaction you had, which is really the set pieces. It's really cool. It does have good social commentary. It does have a sense of humor about it. And it's sort of the post-apocalyptic. It's a new twist on a post-apocalyptic world, right?
Yeah, that's how I would put it that way, definitely. And it just feels like it could have been a story from long ago, you know, and now it's right. been rebooted. It feels like there are like biological elements to it that are fascinating. And I thought it was done in an intelligent way, and it looks cool. The fight sequences are cool. And what you think is going to happen kind of scene to scene, it defies your expectations a little bit that way. It'll kind of go left when you think it's going to go right. Fairly, consistently, which I like. So I would recommend it. I think it's definitely worth watching on Netflix. The ending, and by the ending, I mean like legitimate, like the final two frames leave a little bit to be desired. Other than that, I thought it was great.
So fun movie to watch at home.
Yeah, definitely. If you have some time and you're a little skeptical, like Snowpiercer, the name is a little lame and post-apocalyptic, but give it a chance. I think you'll like it. Chris Evans is good. I'll watch him in future stuff because I think he pulls it off.
David Huntsberger for Snowpiercer on The Spare Man. Thanks, David.
Thanks, dude.
Later.
Okay. Interesting.
Yep.
How we found it through the crazy Facebook suggestions or whatever. All right. That was The Spare Man with David Huntsberger.
Lose it.
Okay, now, speaking of not enjoying films, let's talk to Mother's Day.
The poster looked dumb.
Oh, God. This is... Look, there are
First
people...
First of all, thank you for seeing this film.
Of course.
You're a gentleman and a scholar.
Yes.
No, it's... You know what? I was going to see it anyway. It's... guys, like, look, there are people who are like... super, super fans of genres and of different things. I saw Gods of Egypt in the theater. Okay.
Wow.
I saw Bucky Larson with Nick Swartzen, like that movie. Do you know that movie where he plays the porn actor with the fake teeth? And I go see everything. I'm so disappointed that Sandler's movies aren't airing in the theater anymore and they're only on Netflix, because I used to make that. It was a thing. I'd go. I saw Jack and Jill in the theater.
Oh, my God.
Like, I'm obsessed. And I go to the biggest possible screen and I will watch it. I'll pay the most amount of money to go in the biggest movie screen. I want to watch it at the Chinese in the biggest damn
Well, you
got to
see Mother's Day in IMAX.
Oh, you need to see it in the biggest and like see it in the middle. You see it on like a middle of the afternoon when there's like six people. Bring your friends and then just talk shit the whole way through the movie. That's what I do. I bring a bunch of comedians. And we all sit around and we all talk throughout the whole movie.
Because you're the only one in the theater.
We're the only people there.
There's
nobody there.
Honestly, that is so much fun. I remember we did that a lot time. When we first moved to LA. There was like a group of comics like Paul F. Tompkins and Patton Oswalt. Yeah. We'd all just – and there is nothing like watching a bad movie and just making jokes. There's nothing like it.
You go, wait, oh my God, what did he say? What did your friend say? And then they whisper the joke down and everyone laughs. Oh God, it's so damn good. It's so good. The movie's horrible. It's a horrible, horrible movie.
How do they even make a premise?
Let me run.
What is Gary Marshall doing? Why is he like? Is a Flag Day in the pipeline?
I'm going to be honest with you. That's everything that was going through my head was, what happened to Gary Marshall?
Right.
What happened to Gary Marshall that he went from making amazing films to making this film? We're wrong about this. It's not Gary Marshall. Gary Marshall didn't make great movies. He made like a great movie. It's Penny Marshall that made great movies. She made A League of Their Own. She made great, phenomenal movies. Gary Marshall has made a lot of fucking garbage for a long time. He made that. He's made a lot. I mean, a lot of bad. There's been a lot of bad movies for a while. Like, I started going back through his history because I love Gary Marshall. I'm a you know, I do a Gary Marshall impression. you know, like look, okay, I'm gonna just go back. Let's just take a minute so that everybody's clear on Gary Marshall's history. Is that okay? Can we talk about this for a second?
Yes.
All right. So, as a director, Gary Marshall started off with Happy Days, directed an episode or a couple episodes of that, then a couple episodes of Mork and Mindy, a little Laverne and Shirley. Then he did a movie called Nothing in Common, which was a Jackie Gleason
movie. Tom Hanks movie.
Right, Tom Hanks movie. Then he did Overboard, which is a great movie.
He did The Flamingo Kid, which is a young Matt Damon, or Matt, ah, shit.
Oh, Flamingo Kid. Yeah. No. That's a great film.
Matt Dillon.
Yes.
Yeah. Beaches, Wind Beneath My Wings. I mean, come on. You are the wind. Okay. He did Pretty Woman, which is one of the greatest movies of all time. Then Frank. I love that movie. It's such a huge. I envy
being
her.
Being a prostitute is great.
I'd love to spend some time with Richard Gere. then Frankie and Johnny, kind of a little bit of a step down. And then he did a movie called Exit to Eden with Rosie O'Donnell, where she played a cop. It was her and Dan Aykroyd, and they played like cops.
They put S&M gear on.
That's like when it started getting weird, and then it just like kept getting more weird. He did Dear God, which was a Greg Kinnear movie, which was kind of weird.
I remember that.
The Other Sister, which was about two people with Down syndrome that fall in love, played by Giovanni Ribisi and Juliette Lewis. Mm-hmm. Yes, and then he started doing all the Princess Diaries movies. He directed all those, like Princess Diaries, Princess Diaries 2. Then he did Georgia Rule, which was the big fight with Lindsay Lohan, where she was a huge, giant piece of shit on set and everyone hated her. And then he started doing these movies, Valentine's Day, New Year's Eve, Mother's Day. That's when he, it's not like he has an amazing history of like 50. It's not like he's Woody Allen. It's not like he's Penny Marshall, who is like her movie history phenomenal.
Right.
Like she's amazing. A lot of his shit is bad. It's a lot of bad stuff.
You mean the guy that did Runaway Bride isn't the
No, I mean like and like it kind of feels like at some point maybe he had like a stroke and then it just all the decisions became terrible. Like I don't know what happened over there, but something became bad. It's really an enjoyable movie to watch because of how horrendous it is, and you know that no one. Okay, here's the thing: nobody that's in that movie knows what it's like to be a human being. They're all playing it. They're all alien creature monsters from another planet. It's all exposition. All the dialogue is exposition.
Well, Jennifer Aniston must be in it.
Jennifer Aniston is. Let me explain to you the plot of this movie very quickly. Okay, so in the movie, Jennifer Aniston plays a woman whose husband has just. Her husband tells her something, and she doesn't know. Oh, maybe there's a. Maybe he's interested in getting back together. Timothy Oliphant plays her husband, who, by the way, is a gorgeous gentleman. Okay, so you
and a really good actor.
Yeah,
very good. Actor. Very good.
Justified.
Love the guy. Love the guy.
Deadwood.
Super cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was on Deadwood. I was on last season of Deadwood. I did the whole season as a cowboy. I like lived up there.
Oh my
and
God.
I watched Timothy Oliphant
as a cowboy.
I was like with the cowboy hat and covered in mud, living in the middle of that town with all those weirdos. It was great. It was a good time. All right. So here's the plot line. Plotline is Jennifer Aniston plays a mother of two. She's recently divorced or separated. Recently divorced or separated from Timothy Oliphant. Okay, that's her, and she's like a designer, like a interior designer. That's her whole storyline. Okay, she's separated from him, hoping that they get back together. Okay, that's her whole storyline. Kate Hudson.
Great story.
Kate Hudson plays a woman who's married to an Indian gentleman from The Daily Show, a very phenomenal actor named Asif Mandvi. Asif Mandvi.
Okay, so he's on the Daily Show. He's a correspondent. They play husband and wife, but he, like, she's kept him in the dark about her big secret. Okay, all right, she's got a big secret. Uh oh, right?
Mm-hmm. What could it be?
She has a sister, played by Sarah Chalk, who was on Roseanne, and the second Becky. Okay, mm-hmm. she plays a lesbian with a son, and she's married to Cameron Esposito, a stand-up comedian that we probably know, right? So they play a lesbian couple. They have a big secret. Everyone's got a big secret. Oh, what's the big secret?
What's the reveal?
The big secret is that their parents are not in a mental institution. Their parents are massive racist conservative piles of shit, basically. Okay? So that's the big secret that they've been keeping from their significant others and their families, is that they have parents who live in Texas that are conservative Republican pieces of shit.
Everyone in LA
racist,
has...
racist, saying that when we finally meet Margot Martindale, who plays the mother, she calls Asif Mandvi a towel head 3 seconds into meeting him. And like, it's written as a joke. Like, Gary Marshall wrote it as a comedy joke, and it fucking dies. Like, they write so much racist shit. There's so many racist jokes for the parents to say about this Indian actor, and every single joke is horrendously racist and not funny. Not in a being politically correct way. They're just not good jokes. They're just horrible. Doesn't make any sense. Why don't you go back to where the sand is? Like, horrible. It's crazy.
So they're not even creative racist.
No, it's not even creatively funny racist.
So maybe
it's
they were embarrassed, not that their parents are racist, but just that they're unfunny.
That could be it. That could be it.
We can't visit our parents. They have horrible dialogue.
That's my favorite thing about a dumb rom-com is the contrived. There's this big, oh my God, you could never. And it's always something that in regular life you just go, oh yeah, I got crazy racist parents. Oh yeah, me too. I got an uncle that lives
That's it. That solves the whole thing.
That's it.
It solves the whole problem, the whole movie.
Everyone has a racist someone and they're somewhere.
Yes, of course.
Oh yeah. And then we've got, of course, that's three storylines, right, at this point. Fourth storyline. There's a fifth. The fourth one.
How long was this movie?
A little too long.
Yeah.
Too long. The fourth storyline is, of course, Jason Sudeikis. Jason Sudeikis plays an ex-army sergeant who has two kids, whose wife, played by Jennifer Garner, died in battle and was addicted to karaoke. Loved doing karaoke for her man. So why do we know that? Because he loves to watch old videos of her in the barracks doing karaoke for him. Okay. One of my favorite lines in the whole movie is she does a message after singing karaoke to him through a videotape. I don't know what's happening. She sings to him karaoke and then she goes, "Tell my two chubbos I can't wait to see them," referring to her children as my two chubbos.
So
that's her nickname.
Guess, so Gary Marshall is just sitting around and going, you know what? The wars are big. Let's put a vet
in. Let's do something with the chubbos. And it doesn't make any sense. Okay, so
this is the directing equivalent of an old man going, "Get off my lawn."
Yeah. It's just the worst. It's the whitest thing that's happened.
Cast too, the whole cast,
everybody's white. But even when they're not white, you feel bad for them for being in the movie,
right?
You know, you're like, I can't believe that you ended up in this. This is just an embarrassing situation for you. There's another storyline in the movie. Julia Roberts is actually she's in. So Julia Roberts, that's the big other storyline. Julia Roberts plays like a QVC lady that sells jewelry.
Great.
So great.
So right? Every plot device from the 70s and 80s are put into this movie.
Yes, absolutely. So she has a daughter that she gave up for adoption that she's never met. And of course, we meet that daughter in the movie. And she's dating a British stand-up comedian. And they have a baby together, but they won't get married because she's afraid of getting married because she's never met her mother. She doesn't want to get married and commit, which doesn't make any sense, until she meets her mother, Julia Roberts. Okay? So all of this is distracting, very distracting, because her baby that she's holding in every scene is hands down the fucking ugliest baby you have ever seen in your life. The ugliest. I've never seen a baby that looks like, I don't know what, I don't know whose baby this is. I don't know what's the matter. There's a problem with this baby.
You,
I'm telling you.
Do you think it was a visual effect? Maybe.
it's a CG baby. Yeah. With a it looked like the character that's like Quaid in fucking Total Recall. It's this horrifying monster baby. And they're holding the baby in like close-up frame shots. And the baby's just like. And every shot, I'm like, it was killing my brain. I was like, I was dying laughing. And then like, there's like, he always throws a bunch of random people into it, but he puts a dwarf into this movie as that girl's boss in the restaurant. And the dwarf, his character's name is Shorty. So there's a bunch of short jokes about the dwarf. It's just like, it's like the laziest, worst written pile of shit movie I've seen it in a long time. I mean, wow. It beats out the conversations between Ashton Kutcher and what's her name?
His agent.
Yes. No, in the last movie, the New Year's Eve movie, it was the girl from Glee, the main the main girl that was in Glee, who I can't remember what her name is. But yeah, I mean, it just beats out every horrible thing you can possibly imagine. I'd like to read you some of my favorite quotes very quickly, if I can. I don't want to take too long.
No,
with
go
this.
Right ahead.
But I think it's important that we discuss certain moments in the film now that you have an understanding. There is a scene in which Jason Sudeikis is coaching a soccer game, and a girl is texting on her phone. And he says, "Hey, there's no texting in soccer. There's crying and laughing, but there's no texting in soccer."
Wow. He's calling back daughter's joke.
He's calling from a back movie. Penny Marshall's joke.
Yeah.
Who I, is it his daughter or is it his sister? It's his sister.
Sister.
No,
let's be generous.
Look, Gary Marshall's been old for a million years. Yeah. He looks like he could be. It's fine. Here's another great one. There's a moment of exposition where Jennifer Aniston is sitting in her car and she yells out the entire plot of the movie in exposition in her car while people are walking around.
That's good.
Which is amazing. I loved it. There's stuff like they cut to a birthday party. And when you see the birthday party and the camera comes down on the birthday party, as it's coming down, you hear, this is the voiceover you hear. Camera's coming down on a birthday party and you hear, "It's a party with a slide and a llama and balloons." You just hear that.
Wow, really?
Like, it's all exposition. It's like, it's made for like aliens to watch this movie. it's like they're explaining everything. This is an actual line of dialogue. A clown says to Jennifer Aniston, says, "What do you think I should do?" Oh, here's the best part. Fucking Jennifer Aniston was just, People Magazine just said that she is the most beautiful woman in the world, right? Or beautiful woman. And
it happened at one point.
Just read No. Just like a month ago, they were like, "Wow, Jennifer Aniston, most beautiful woman in America, most beautiful woman in the world." 5 minutes into this movie, Timothy Oliphant is like, "Hey, Jennifer, I got to talk to you. All right, we have to have a little talk. I know that we were married, but it's important we talk right now." She's like, "Oh my God, what is it? Does he want to get back together?" And he's like, "I'm marrying a 21-year-old." Like 4 seconds into the movie. And you're like, "Hey, guess what, Jennifer Aniston? Not the hottest woman in the world." Guess who is? That 21-year-old who is fine as hell. Like, she's gorgeous. She's beautiful.
And that's how you say, "I'm marrying a 21-year-old.
That's what he says. Yeah. I am marrying a 21-year-old. Like, it's horrible. She, at some point, takes comfort in a clown at the party. She like is upset. She's right. Like, "My kids are going to get more interested in this 21-year-old than in me. What do you think?" And the clown says, "Love is a lot like a bottomless hanky. It's also a lot like a bottomless cup of coffee or a bottomless love of a mother and her child." And she says, "Thank you, clown." And then she hugs him. and it's like a real moment.
What?
And you're like, how?
What?
How is it? Was this movie written in like Spanish and translated? Like, what the fuck happened while they were making this horrible, horrible movie? They even I'm gonna end this by just saying there is a big climax in the film. And by big climax, I mean, you know, kind of a bullshit climax where all the characters end up in the racist father's RV.
Oh, and guess what? Hijinks.
The brakes have gone. The brakes aren't working. Oh. And they're going to crash. No. And they're being chased down by a bunch of police officers. And the police officers are chasing them. And Cameron Esposito is driving a car with a float attached to it shaped like a vagina. Okay? And they're this is a real thing, and they're chasing, and then the cop gets out of the car. Guess who it is? Comedy legend Larry Miller. Okay?
Really?
And you know what he says? His line is, "Hey, who's got the registration for the vagina?"
Oh,
that's the movie that just happened. So if you get a chance to go watch this and then stay for the closing credits, because there's music and all the songs in the closing credits, including the opening credits. The songs are literally, "It's Mother's Day, a day for mothers. Loving your mother is a great day for mothers." It's like, it doesn't. It's like your brain will shit the bed while you're watching this movie. You're like,
great.
If you can make it through that movie and feel like everything makes sense, God bless you. I can't do it. I loved it. I had the best worst time ever.
All right.
Oh my God. All right. All right. Well, then let's talk about the trailers that we were looking at. The Batman Killing Joke trailer.
This looks
classic novel.
Awesome.
Classic graphic novel from Alan Moore.
Which I love it. I love the graphic novel. This looks great. I actually was surfing with a guy who used to one of the directors of the original Batman animated series.
Whoa.
And I was like, dude, I love that. That's awesome. He goes, yeah, you're in the right age group. He's like, yeah, you were in your 20s when this a couple years ago. Yeah, that. And I was like, oh, fuck. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
This looks awesome. I'm pumped up for it. It's rated R.
It is rated R.
The first animated ones that's rated R, am I right?
It's definitely the first one. They started PG, then they went to PG-13, and this is definitely the first.
Is this getting a theatrical release?
Probably not. Generally, they've had such great success with just releasing them these straight to video. It's probably where it's going.
Wow.
Although I can't remember, I wonder if the Dark Knight was R. I can't remember now if that was like a hard PG-13. I don't know.
You mean the Nolan movies?
No, when they adapted two animated movies, they did Frank Miller's graphic novel.
That's a great question.
Because that one was really that was pretty brutal. But this one, it's interesting because they use a more classic character design. So it kind of looks like a little bit of the older Batman, but it's definitely obviously much darker in tone.
And it looks really cool.
It looks really good.
I love that Hamill's doing it.
Yeah, I know. Mark Hamill came back for the voice of the Joker. And then is it Kevin Conroy came back for Batman too?
Yeah, I think it's the whole cast.
It looks really good. I'm really excited to see it. I would recommend not letting your children see it.
Yeah,
this is an adult.
Yeah,
thing,
this is an adult animated film for sure. Okay, and the next one is Snowden. Now, this is Oliver Stone trying desperately to remain relevant.
Hashtag JGL.
Yeah, hashtag JGL.
Playing Edward Snowden.
And the trailer, when you look at it too, it's so heavily dramatized that it's making it look more like a fiction film, which I don't think is necessary because it's such a compelling, amazing story. I don't know if you need to kind of put all these crazy, you know, fiction narrative devices in. So I am looking forward. I'm still going to go see it. I love JGL and I love the story. And you know, I'm really curious.
Why is Joseph doing a weird voice in the movie? He's kind of doing like
that's the thing that's peculiar. He doesn't need to do that.
No, he's doing like a low voice, like I'm hello, I am.
He's doing an impression of Edward Snowden, which
is so not necessary.
Yeah.
It's you know, I get it. You're an actor playing a real person. You don't have to look and sound or try to look and sound exactly like him.
Well, it's just an interesting. Look, Steve Hofstetter looks like, you know him? You know that comedian?
Yeah.
He looks like Edward Snowden.
Yeah.
That's what Edward Snowden looks like. He doesn't look like,
Joseph
Gordon-Levitt. Yeah.
You know, it's funny because When I was watching this trailer, I was like, one of these movies where I want this to be good. I want to see a dramatized version of this.
Yeah.
But then I go, I'm watching the trailer going, I feel like I should just go watch Citizen 4 again.
You know,
a documentary.
I get that Peter O'Toole doesn't look exactly like T.E. Lawrence. That's okay with me.
Sure. Yeah.
But a wacky accent. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it'll work. I don't know. It's just a trailer. And, you know, and it's weird seeing him do a voice. We've never seen him do a voice or change his voice, really, in a movie. So let's, you know.
That's a good point.
We'll give him a shot.
It might be the kind of thing where it, and I've had this happen with movies, where you're watching it first, like, oh, this is weird. And then 15, 20 in, I'm like.
You kind of get used
to it. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm good with it. Because if the story is compelling enough and.
Your brain adjusts and
you know,
your ears adjust.
I want. You know, if this is the resurgence of Oliver Stone by, like, here's his new conspiracy, like a modern day one that's real and it's scary. And it looks like he's sort of, because we've talked about this before. It's such a weird thing to try to show what the internet is.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
How do you do that? So it looks like he's attempting to show, like, all these images that the NSA has access to on this giant screen. So that, I don't know, that might be compelling.
And here's what really,
I don't know.
Here's what really interests me about this movie. And I don't know how much of it, and again, I'd have to watch the documentary. Mm-hmm. Did you see the documentary?
Part of it.
Okay. I'd have to watch the whole thing again. What I like is the fact that, that now this movie shows the gradual change of from him just being basically a genius and wanting to work for the CIA and the NSA to serve his country, to actually make a difference. Mm-hmm. And then having him turn around that, like, oh, our government shouldn't be doing this. And then going off and starting WikiLeaks and all that stuff. So I'd really like – I'm really interested in seeing that part dramatized.
Where is Snowden now?
I think he's still in Hong Kong.
Isn't he?
China or something like he's you know, they're trying to extradite him and they can't. And
he has asylum somewhere.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great if he was actually watching Asylum? And he was Asylum.
Well, he could be watching us because I don't have a piece of paper over my camera on my.
Oh, wow.
Computer. Yeah, it could be on. The red light could
be off.
Because
that's the thing that he says in the documentary and that you see dramatized in this trailer is the NSA can access the camera in your phone, in my laptop, and watch you do anything when it's off, whatever. That's what's terrifying.
That's
why he blew the whistle.
Are they still able to do it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, that's so scary.
It's terrifying. Like, they could look at anyone. The NSA is tapping all of our phones, like,
most likely Google is, too.
Yeah. Google's doing it for sales.
Yeah, yeah.
The NSA was like, oh, we need it for security.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It's scary to think about that they can.
When I get advertised to on Facebook, it freaks me out.
Yeah, like, how did you know I was just at that website?
Like, I go and look on eBay at stuff, and then I go on Facebook, and it's like, are you interested in buying a 1987 Return of the Jedi action figure? And you're like, how did you know? Yes, I do, but how did you know?
Is the shipping free? But this still freaks me out.
Why are you doing this to me? Freaking out the whole time.
All right.
So, okay.
So we're going to see. It sounds like we're all going to see.
Yeah, we're going to watch it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's the best. I love that guy.
Both of these movies we'll be watching. DVD and Blu-ray. Joy.
This was a miss the mark. Jennifer Lawrence writing on Past Glory. Not Past Glory, but her reputation as a fine actress, and she is a fine actress. This movie just sort of.
Probably got greenlit on the package rather than the script.
Yeah, it's the writer-director. It's that combo between him and her and them just kind of going like, hey, let's make a movie about something that no one gives a shit about. Yeah.
And we want the same cast as Silver Linings Playbook, same writer-director, and then it was like an instant greenlight. Well, I don't even need to read the script.
That movie felt so overcast. I'm so sorry for interrupting. It felt so overcast. It was like... Why like, hey, let's make fucking John Goodman the doorman, and let's make let's make Kathy Bates the lady that works at the Taco Bell. Like, what? Right. Why are you casting a million? Like, it could have, if that movie was made as an independent film with some very like
really interesting small people.
Up and comers.
Up and coming actors and actresses. I think that could have been a very cool, interesting movie.
Or really solid character actors that have been around a while but aren't household names.
But you don't need to stack the deck that high in a movie like that, because it takes away from whatever the story was. I don't remember. Like, I watched that movie and I'm like, why are you making a movie about a lady with a broom handle? Like, I don't.
Right.
Like, it's too distracting to have someone like, Hunger Games, Jennifer Lawrence, doing Hunger Games and then immediately doing a movie like that and then filling that out. It was just too much.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. I felt like they overcast the shit out of that
movie. And I guess their strategy was right in the sense that they probably went, the script isn't great, but we're going to win, we're going to get nominated. And they got a bunch of nominations just on that. Yeah. Everyone else's resume, and it wasn't that great of a movie.
No, it wasn't that great. It wasn't that great. Fifth Wave.
Now, this is the Twilight Alien Invasion movie. Did you see this in the theater?
I did not see this in the theater because I was I missed this one. I just I'm sorry. Brit, this is a Brit. Who's the main actress in this movie?
Chloe Grace Moretz.
No, I didn't see this. I didn't see this movie. Tell me about this movie.
It's Twilight Alien Invasion movie kind of thing, and it's all trying to get the Twilight money or the Hunger Games money. And
But Alien Invasion version.
Yeah, but Invasion, and then like, oh, where's the love triangle going to be? I'm like, oh, it's later. Okay, now I got it. So it was one of those movies, too, that came and went literally within weeks.
Yeah.
It did very poorly. I know my daughter wanted to see it. And sometimes you have to protect your children, not just from content, but from poor quality entertainment.
Yeah,
you
don't want
to knowing what, thinking that this is a good movie.
Yeah. No. I love bad movies, but bad sci-fi movies, they really – it bothers me a little. That's where I draw my line. That's my line gets drawn at bad sci-fi.
You'll go to Mother's Day, but Fifth Wave.
I'll go watch Jack and Jill in the theater, but I want to see the horrible nightmare that's happening on screen and see like what these people spent all this time doing. Mm-hmm. But like shitty sci-fi, that like messes with like my favorites. I love sci-fi. Like I'm a massive Star Wars and Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica nerd. So when you start messing with the things I love, then I'm like, oh, I don't want to watch this. But like a family film that's horrible. Cast, it's really shitty. Come on, bring it on. I'll go every time.
Ridiculous plot devices.
Oh, God.
You're in.
The brakes are out.
Oh.
God.
So, all right.
Site Spotlight.
So, it's a weekly film news, another great edition. You could check out what Neil is doing on the site. And like I said, I wanted to say the Kickstarter has funded. You guys are awesome and amazing. You really supported and came up. We have almost 500 backers.
That's amazing.
What, $4.99?
That's amazing.
$4.99. It ended earlier this morning. And from the bottom of my heart, guys, thank you so, so much. And before I read these horrifying comments that you guys wrote.
It's great.
I want to mention one thing. We had a couple more outreach people who were asking, like, what's going on in the comments section? Like a couple emails. And then one person actually emailed and said that, look, if I back this, I work for a library. Would you mind giving us an extra copy for the library? And I said, absolutely. And I want to bring this point up. Graham and I here at Comedy Film Nerds are very, very supportive to libraries. If any of you work at libraries and you want copies of any of the books we have, sure. Comedy Film Nerds, Guide to Movies, Pacify Me, we are more than happy to donate them.
Yeah,
that's so cool of you guys.
And when Long Ago and Far Away is done, absolutely, we're more
work
than happy
at
to donate them.
A university or a high school, whatever, man.
Yeah. No, we're happy to help. So, and I do want to make one quick disclaimer. These are the most obscene of all the comments we've gotten. So if you are easily offended, please fast forward. Spoiler alert, these are offensive.
Yes.
And unbelievably entertaining. Here we go, from Ben J. Now, if you fucksticks want to jump in your cock wagon and come to the UK sometime, I'll even treat you to some warm beer or coconut vegan dribble juice or whatever the fuck it is you like.
Oh my
that
God.
That was referring to me.
Yes. Keep up the good work.
wow.
From Marcus Hodges. Almost there, Chris. Great job. Additionally, we now know that the proper usage of cockwagon is one word, not two. The two-word version comes out as cockwagon, and that is fucking unacceptable.
oh, my God.
Craig Rasmussen, hear ye, his royal fuckness, Ropespear McCockwagon, and this is the name we wanted you to put in the credits to the comments, hath decreed all ye fucksticks across the land must henceforth rally thy towns and fellows to back the fuck out of this project. And there was much rejoicing.
Pam, it's almost like you're telling people to quit.
I know. Pam Myers, dear sirs, we shall soonish be watching a movie together. Oh, Pam Myers bought the Comedy Film Nerd spoiler tier.
Really?
Yes, three of them went. Three spoiler tiers we're going to be doing.
Oh, Pam, let us know what movie you want to watch.
I'll be sending that info out with the surveys. I look forward to it, as should you, fuck nuts. Seriously, I increased my pledge when I realized I couldn't let this opportunity go. And the next one, Brian Berkeley. I am only mildly interested in this graphic novel, but I am totally on board for a Bulgarian-made film adaptation of it. You can kickstart for that. I am backer number one.
So many inside jokes in here.
Wow.
I'll tell you all the story later. He made a movie that went to Bulgaria. And they ruined it.
My God.
This is amazing.
Ryan Berner. My ex-best friend is the mayor of my town, Ropespear McCockenwagon. Today he said to me, that fucking nerd Mancini can't pronounce the word theater, and his Kickstarter will never fund. Guilty. Now we are mortal enemies, so I increase my pledge to prove that shithammer wrong.
Nice.
Amazing.
Ryan Fenves. Colleen had a newfound confidence following the Gremlins incident, and Saturdays have never been the same for the McCockwagons. When Colleen and Ropespear came back from an evening on the town, Colleen slinked off to the bathroom to get ready. Ropespear went to the bedroom. It was going to be a night to remember. A few minutes later, the bathroom door slowly lurched open. The light beamed into the dark room, leaving her in silhouette. Behind her legs hung the fuckstick. Her sultry voice asked, "It's reverse cockwagon time. Hope you loosened up. I'm looking forward to the novel. Cheers."
Oh, my God.
Who said to use the word, the name Colleen? Was that? Oh, that was, Jeff Tate.
Yeah.
David Tatuan. Long ago and far away, actually just across the bay, Ropespear McCockenwagon held his weaponized fuckstick to the neck of his nemesis. After years of planning and brewing in hatred, his plan has worked. Suddenly, as the fuckstick's prepared for a lethal blow, a cockneyed accent breaks the tense silence. Marfa? His nemesis muttered. What's all this then? Exclaimed Ropespear. Why are you saying that name?
Oh, my God.
Just in time and out of nowhere, Colleen, the cunty love interest of McCockwagon's enemy, arrives and reveals, it's his mama's name, isn't it? Ropespear releases his foe and his fuckstick and walks away, having learned a valuable lesson, whatever the fuck it was. Oh, my God.
You guys are fantastic.
Yeah. Eric DeFrancis. While I find the filth and profanity in these comments to be absolutely disgusting, I believe it was Lenny Bruce who said, take away the right to say fuck, and you take away the right to say fuck Zack Snyder.
Wow!
Good luck and Godspeed to you and your cockwagon ride to hell.
This is amazing.
This is fantastic.
Your fans are the best.
Yeah. They are.
Holy crap.
They write novels.
Yeah. Andrew Bowman. Ropes McCumberbutton McCockwagon and I went to see the horrible fuckstick of a movie, The Tree of Life, and I, Chris J. Mancini, must say that I am hashtag Team Graham all the fucking way. And at the end, cockwagon.
You know who Andrew Bowman is? Do you know? Wait, is that the guy from Nerdist? Is that one of their guys?
Look up Andrew Bowman. Yeah. Randall, there's only 16 more, so hang in.
Oh my God.
Oh, this is so great.
Randall Deaton. The wind was howling as Ropespear McCockenwagon stepped out of the shadows to confront his nemesis, Colleen. He knew that she had absconded with all the powerful fucksticks from his fortress, Cunt Whistle Keep. As he approached her silently from behind, he turned while flourishing the artifact and shouting, "Begone, foul garbage person!" That's Dave Huntsberger reference. In that moment, McCockwagon knew that his life was forfeit and eternal damnation in Bulgaria awaited him. None could stand before the might of Colleen as she led her armies of albino penguins across the land, destroying dicketry in all its forms. Or some shit. Fuck off, ass nuggets.
My God.
Dina Larkin. Ropespear, hashtag JGL. McCockwagon put all of his kitten hands, palm strike-like, in and said, fuck sticks, I'm going to back this project. Point of order, those nerds have given hours of entertainment to all the Colleens of the world and totally hashtag work it. Good luck, Chris. Daniel Stevens, our social media assistant. The spirit of Robespierre McCockwagon came to me in a dream. He said to me, hey, fuckstick, I'm your great-grandfather, and I bring you a terrible fucking message from the future. In the year 2020, Donald Trump will be reelected as the president of the United Fuckfaces of America. Side note, the UN changed the name of U.S. after Trump is elected the first time. But all this can be avoided if contribute to Chris's motherfucking Kickstarter. So go quickly, dickface, and save the future of humanity. Hashtag feel the fucking burn. Holy religious and ancient weapons are no fucking match for a good fucking blaster at your side, you cockwagon fuckstick. I just backed this motherfucking Kickstarter. Hodmi, if I die, I have to go before him, and he will ask me, what is the riddle of steel, fuckstick? I don't know it. He will cast me out of Valhalla and laugh at me. That's Robespierre McCockenwagon strong on his mountain. Tom Oliphant. Robespierre McCockenwagon burst into the room. Zack Snyder and Michael Bay are conspiring to take over the Marvel Cinematic Universe as well as the coming Star Wars movies, he cried. Colleen stood slowly, her eyes narrowed. I'll show those cunts. She hopped in her canoe and rode on down to the Disney executive offices. There she gave an impassioned speech about nuance and allegory. And the executives were swayed. She and Robespierre danced and celebrated the defeat of the cabal of Snyder and Bay.
This is so many levels of inside jokes.
I know, and it's so creative, great. Too.
You guys are fantastic.
You guys are amazing. Joshua Borbone. Fuck, you did it. Congrats. So happy for you, Chris. Happy to be one of the first few people to get on board. I felt your stress through your podcast. Now it's a smooth ride in the cock wagon. Michelle Lucas. Bull fucking shit. You cock wagons did it. Congrats, fuckheads.
Thank you, Michelle.
Jonathan Sturm. Yes, I jumped on the cock wagon after you were funded, but the fuck stick feels the same to me. Happy fuck funding day.
Can't get enough.
Joe White. Thanks for the big shiny CFN cock wagon that you masterfully steer into my ears each week. You're big hairy ball bags, and I can't wait to read your book. What ho from jolly old England Pip Pip cock wagon. All right. Number 7. I was riding my fuck wagon down a dusty old trail when the biggest shipper of all time, Robespierre McCockenwagon, buffaloed my wagon driver and tied me to the train tracks. He demanded $1,000 in solid gold. Since I had no money at the time, I knew the shitstein was going to kill me. Then, much to my surprise, the wonderful and brave Colleen showed up. She opened her cunt lips and swallowed the fart knuckle, thus ending the reign of terror of old Robespierre McCockenwagon. Now, I will say, this is also a movie reference because of there's been old Western horror movie called Grim Prairie Tales that starred James Earl Jones that this scenario happened.
Oh my God. That is awesome.
Yeah, so wow. Joe, nice work. Elise, Robespierre McCockwagon has a fuckstick business. His wife Colleen left him after gremlins attacked their home alone, lost in New York. Ravindra Saran. Colleen and her merry little cunts ran a traveling cockwagon business.
Oh my God.
They traveled the country selling fucksticks and business was good. However, one day her merry little cunts were kidnapped and her cockwagon blown up by the nefarious Robespierre McCockenwagon, played by Zack Snyder, in a plot to have a cockwagon business that is successful as well-regarded as Colleen's while skipping all the groundwork she did to get her business to where it is. Join Colleen on an epic adventure to rescue her merry little cunts and restore her business, featuring special guest appearances by the freaked out new dad, played by Chris Mancini, and Libby, played by Graham Elwood.
Oh, Libby, that's a Todd Glass reference. Nice.
Fuck, coming to theaters 8/5/16. All right, number 4, Jesse Miller.
Jesus Christ.
There's 4 left. And once again, I find myself drunkenly cruising Kickstarter. What? That whiskey? I should back this project? Sure, why not? You've always given me good advice, like the time you told me I should take my pants off at the bar. That worked out fine, except for that fuckstick Robespierre McCockenwagon kicking me out of the place. I'm sure Colleen will convince them to let me back in. At least I think she will. Come to think of it, I'm not sure if she exists. Oh, well, I'll just get another drink and go back to trying to forget about that time when I was a child and that airline pilot invited me to the cockpit and asked me if I liked gladiator movies.
Airplane reference? Outstanding.
Yep. I can't amazing.
Believe no one cut on to that.
My dad says you don't try hard. You try Dragon Walt. I fucking love that.
Wendy Stiegel.
So good.
Fuck, I'm tired. Raising baby Podfest takes a lot out of me. so much that I really just have no energy to give you the details of the weekend. Mike and I ended up in a cock wagon with Rokesbeer and Colleen down in Baja playing a game of fucksticks. Always glad to once again support you guys. See you all in September.
Oh, good. Wendy and Mike are coming from
I think this is my favorite one. Matthias Becker. Oi, people, language.
nice.
And this is the last one from Andrew Utek from Japan.
Hey, right on.
Got in just at the end. I am on freaking vacation, you bastard. I'm on freaking vacation. Golden week, motherfucker. Do you know it? Golden motherfucking week. Let me ask you something. Do I look like a bitch to you? Do I look like a bitch? Then why? Why, motherfucker, will you try to fuck me like a bitch? I myself a shit ton of fun catching Captain America cockwagon war and settle in to just cunt around on Facebook and up pops this notice from you bum scratching scrotal lickers about backing your uncivil like kicking the ball starter project. So fine, you assholes. Take my fucking money. Take it and stuff it. Stuff it, I said. Fuck yeah, just take it. I feel like a virgin handing over my hard-earned yen to an old street-wheeling walking pro with a riding crop and a chip on her shoulder. And, oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to your quality product, asshole.
So, like, there was a little...
Wow.
You guys, that was... We need to publish these somewhere.
Yeah, I know. You really should.
We really should put these in a book and sell them or something. Like, yeah. These are fantastic.
Guys, thank you so much. These were incredibly entertaining, and it was also entertaining to get the confused emails from people who weren't listening to the show. What was going on? We have to do this again. When we do our next Kickstarter, we got to do this
just
again.
Just for the comments.
Yes.
That's amazing. I mean, they were like, your fans are so incredible.
We
like,
have the greatest fans.
Yeah, they amazing. You know, they're great listeners, and there's so many inside jokes there and so much funny stuff. Like, amazing. I love it.
We just were like, we started saying, hey, first we were like, hey, say fuck stick. And then everybody, yeah. Cock, cock, cock. Then we're like, say fuck stick. Then yeah. Say cock wagon. Yeah. And then we're like, the last one was like, Rokesbeer, make cock wagon.
Yeah.
Something like
tell a story
that.
About
tell
it.
A story. Wow. And then we got these novellas.
Yeah, it was great.
So smart. That's amazing.
You guys
are
smart.
And you got
awesome.
Funded. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So, wow.
And it was mostly from you guys. So
you can finally build that candy store you always
yes.
wanted. That's what the Kickstarter was for.
Yes,
for I just always assume that everyone wants to build a candy store.
Yes.
All right. Well.
So, all right. Well, the supersized episode premiering this week. Captain America Civil War.
There's nothing else for us to talk about.
No.
Yeah.
No,
I'm so fired up for this movie.
I can't wait.
It's, mm-hmm.
It's going to be amazing.
Every trailer I see, I'm more fired up.
Yeah, I can't wait. And you know what? You gave me a great idea. We might actually take the drive into Hollywood go to the Man Chinese.
It's the only time I want to see 3D.
Right.
I started doing it last year when the theater is like...
Actually, it's probably playing it out at the other one,
It's probably playing
it
both across the street from each other. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. The IMAX 3D for a movie like... I saw Avengers on IMAX 3D. I saw Jurassic Park at the Chinese on IMAX 3D. It blows your fucking mind away. It's the biggest screen you've ever seen.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's the size of Utah. It's unbelievable.
The TCL Chinese.
Yeah.
It's the greatest theater
in the
world.
You've sold me. I'm going to get amazing. Tickets. I'm going to get tickets.
So I'm going out of town this weekend, but my girlfriend and I have to see this together. So I'm waiting till Monday at noon. So I got to... I'm going to be in Chicago. I'm going to go to Cubs game. Like, I got to stay away.
I can't see it
social media.
Yeah. I can't see it till noon either. Till Monday either. So,
I'm so fired up, dude. There's plenty of, because all the nighttime weekend trainings are already sold out anyway.
Right.
But the Monday at noon, plenty of seats.
Right. Good to know.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, you can pick your seats. It's the best place. I'm telling you, you'll leave this movie. Seeing it there, like, completely fucking blown away.
I think any IMAX, I mean, around the country, if you get a chance to see it at an IMAX, that's the way to do it. Yeah. I mean, those movies are so... I mean, I took my mom to see episode one at... not episode one, episode eight.
Yeah.
Star Wars. I was like, I took her to see the worst pile of shit ever.
Oh, really? Wow.
No.
Yes.
I took her
why
to
would you
see...
do that? You hate your mother.
Yes. Sorry,
you
don't
I'm like, Mom, wait till you see the kid that plays Anakin.
Yeah.
He's amazing. He's definitely not a psychopath who's going to end up in jail. no, I took her to go see the most recent
Seven.
One, Force Awakens. Yeah. Force Awakens. And Force Awakens. And we went and saw it at the Chinese in IMAX. And it was mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing.
Look.
So are they all in 3D, too?
It just changes your whole perspective on what movies
now,
are supposed to look
like.
Now,
I did hear this.
Like.
I'm not sure.
I think there
sure.
might be some standard screenings, but For
a big movie like this, you go see that.
Here's the thing I heard too. Now, one of our fans could probably email and verify this or not. I heard IMAX, to get the IMAX label on your theater, you actually have to have, there's certain standards like that you have to have. Right. Like there's certain brightness to the bulbs and the projection and all that stuff. Because sometimes what happens with 3D when you wear the glasses, it drops the brightness down. And whereas IMAX, I heard, you can't do that. They have to have, it has to be exactly right the way the movie's supposed
to be.
And
this is this new laser 3D, they're calling it at the Chinese. And it's whatever fucking lasers you got, kid, they're working.
Yeah, baby.
I've talked so much shit about 3D over the years on this show. So for me to say that you need certain movies, go see it on IMAX 3D.
You know what's really weird? I went to the opening of the IMAX at TCL Chinese. I went to the like the opening day when they first opened it, and it was to see the movie Wizard of Oz with Judy Garland. They had cut it into a 3D movie, and they put it up in that on that screen. And everyone from TCL, which is I believe a Chinese company or a Japanese company, I'm not positive, but everyone from the company flew out, so it was insane, and it was crazy. And they brought out the last surviving Munchkin on stage, and he came out for everyone and spoke about what it was like making the movie, and then they played it on screen, and it was absolutely bizarre because they had, because you know those sound stages that they shot on, they don't have any distance to them, so they had to create fake distance in the movie to make it all look real. It was so neat. It was so neat. And like when Glenda like flew in the giant bubble, it looked like she was flying through the room. It was so cool. I mean, I love that theater.
Captain America, and get ready. There will be a spoiler up next week about
it. Oh, definitely.
No two ways about it.
And Being Charlie, this is the new Rob Reiner movie about an addicted teenager.
Shit.
Yeah.
Pass.
Now, the next one is a very limited release.
See Civil War twice. What the fuck are you doing?
This next movie I'm interested in seeing, but not this weekend.
Right.
This is Elstree, 1976. This is a documentary about Star Wars and what it was like to be on set and actually shoot the movie.
Great.
Is that coming out in theaters?
So,
is that a theatrical release?
It's probably really, really limited release. It might be just like a New York and LA.
I can't wait to see that.